The Carmen and Yurko podcast is sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Go to Tito'sHometownTales.com and hear the stories of Chicago's defining sports moments through the lens of your favorite ESPN 1000 hosts. That's Tito'sHometownTales.com.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Get Carmen and Yurko podcasts on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
I'd like you to meet a real inspiration.
Carmen and Yurko, ESPN 1000.
Watch us and join the chat. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago on Twitch.tv or the Twitch app. We're live in the First Midwest Bank State Street Studios. Yurk's off today. He's back Monday. Midway Jeff Meller sitting in. He's going to be all over the station all weekend, as he always does during football season. 8 o'clock Sunday morning. You got the fantasy show. He takes calls for an hour, gives you up-to-the-minute injuries and stuff like that.
And then at 10 a.m., Dion Miller and I will get you set for Bears and Bengals for 2 hours. So make sure you're locked in. We'll always do a hit with JD at 10:30 as well.
So they've got the pregame starting at 10, leading up to the noon kick at Soldier. Bears out to a two-point favorite again. It was all the way down to one. We'll talk more about that with Todd Furman when he joins us in 30. Fred Huebner will have post-game. Think the Bears will bounce back against the Bengals. But that's what we're talking about today. It's also a free ticket Friday, another chance to win White Sox tickets courtesy of Chicago Cut at 11:45. And we'll talk to Chuck Garfine in a few minutes about the White Sox. Let's grab some more Bears calls. Morton Grove, Joe, you're up next on ESPN 1000. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking a call.
You're welcome.
I'm just so at it and frustrated with Matt Nagy. I wasn't impressed with the hire in the first place, and I know that's easy to say now, but he just refuses to run the ball. I mean, what's wrong with if they show that they're not able to stop it, why not continue to use it until they do stop it? Don't we always hear experienced coaches say, hey, until they show us they can stop us, we're going to continue to use it. Why wouldn't you use something that's working for me, for you? It makes no sense to me.
Joe, thank you. I mean, for so long, I wanted the Bears to get out of the, you know, we get off the bus running thing. They've gone from one extreme to the other, you know? And I get what Meller was saying. I mean, we'd probably appreciate it a little bit more if Matt would just be like, look, guys, I don't want to run the ball. I don't want to run it. I'm a former quarterback. I came up under Andy, and I want to throw it. And
here's
that's
what
all I want to do, you know?
If you want to get into the analytics of the NFL, the best down to throw the football is on first down. It's
absolutely
a huge advantage.
Yes.
So I don't have a problem with that.
Absolutely.
Don't lie to people, though, and tell them, hey, we're going to run the ball, when you're clearly not. Because I'll tell you what, if ever there's a time to run the ball, it's against the Rams offense that had a huge advantage on you at home. Where the Rams are at home, you're on the road.
Yes.
Meanwhile, you can't even commit to it then. After a 41-yard gain,
I know.
I mean, if you're not going to commit then, when will you do it? Because that's the one time I could say, you know what? It makes a little bit more sense if you want to lean on David Montgomery in this game with Andy Dalton under center. Because I'll guarantee you, when Justin Fields goes out there, they're going to have a quarterback who's a running threat where they should be passing the ball a lot more often on first down when Fields actually feels comfortable in this offense, because that's a huge advantage. Guys like Kyler Murray, you saw what he did on Sunday, Carm. Part of the reason Cliff Kingsbury looked so good on Sunday was because Kyler Murray was given the opportunity to use the run-pass threat on first down.
That's right.
You want mobile quarterbacks who have that ability.
That's
the Bears have one on the bench.
Yeah, exactly.
That chess piece who, just wait.
And first down is a great opportunity. Again, it goes back to Holmgren. Really, we were talking in the break, it all goes back to Bill Walsh. Mm-hmm. I mean, he created so many of the principles that are alive and well today. But Holmgren got it directly from Walsh. And Yurko would tell you, if they... The problem is Nagy doesn't know what to do if they're not successful on first down, on early downs. And the good coordinators are. First down is a great time to throw. Throwing the football is good because an average team's going to probably be somewhere around 6.5 to 7 yards per attempt. A good running team, you're at about 4.5 yards an attempt. So start doing the math. It's why teams do want to throw. But what did Holmgren do? What did Walsh do if they were unsuccessful? They knew then how to try to get themselves in third and manageable by running the ball. Yurko will tell you all the time, if Mike was unsuccessful throwing, you better believe a running play of some sort was coming next. And I don't know that Nagy does have that ability.
And it's those basic principles that we're talking about that I wonder if they evade Nagy, because he does get pushed into these corners where he goes to the talking points. We know we need to run the football. I'm not an idiot,
I'm not an idiot. I know I need to run the ball. Ryan's in Gurnee. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, guys, nobody's mentioning that. It's not like the Rams were stacking the run. They were running no middle linebacker, no backside middle linebacker, no weak side outside linebacker. So the middle is wide open.
You are correct, Ryan, but we have mentioned it.
Yes, earlier in the week. Yeah.
We mentioned it a lot. I mentioned it like 10 minutes ago.
Yes, that too.
The Rams are still doing some of the Brandon Staley stuff, even though he's gone. Yes, and that's probably more of a trend we're going to see around the NFL. Like, teams just sort of daring you to run.
Defenses will give you the run because they understand that the pass is what they need to concern themselves with these
days. And most teams want to pass, especially on early down. Yes. So you're right. So they'll play a lot of light boxes. That's true. We'll get back out and take some more of your Bears calls here in just a few moments. Let's take a minute or two to talk to our buddy Chuck Garfine, who is covering the White Sox as always. The magic number remains 7. 7:05 first pitch tonight here on your home for White Sox baseball, ESPN 1000. Game will be on NBC Sports Chicago, and that's where you're going to find Chuck. What up, Chuck?
Not much. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We're doing well. We're, Bears angst, as you can imagine. I want the postseason to start.
I know, as do I. As do I. But I'm kind of looking at these last 2 weeks as the drive to try to get the number two seed. Yeah, I mean, and they didn't help themselves.
No.
Two straight to the Angels, and the Astros won two straight over the Rangers. So, but I would love to see that happen. I want this team to, you know, come together, win a bunch of games. Obviously, they've been playing like 500 baseball for about 6 weeks, but or maybe it might be 5 weeks. Anyway, let's turn this around. Those two games. If you only take two of three from the Angels, that's fine. You can't lose that series. And that was upsetting. But they've got the Rangers. They've got the Tigers coming up. They can
They've really pounded the Tigers this year. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Tigers' record, like against everybody but the White Sox, I think the Tigers are 500 on the year, honestly. Right? I mean, they're close.
You could argue that the team they got to look out for the next 3 years in the division is the Tigers.
I think there's no question about that, Chuck. If I had to predict it out right now, I think you're absolutely right. Too bad they got the manager we wanted, too, but that's a story for a different day.
Don't rip off that band-aid. Scratch that scab.
Don't worry, I won't.
Chuck, how concerned are you? Because I have to admit, I've been a little bit concerned with Craig Kimbrell here the last few outings. Are you concerned that this may be a situation where, you know, in Chicago, we're familiar, he lost it for a good stretch there. He did get it back, but it hasn't gone as swimmingly as Sox fans were maybe hoping when they got him at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, look at the numbers. He had a 0.49 ERA with the Cubs. His ERA with the White Sox so far is over 5. It's inflated because, ironically, two really bad outings against the Cubs really ballooned his ERA. And I asked Ethan Katz, White Sox pitching coach, about this a couple of days ago. And there was something mechanical that he had to fix. And they believe that he has fixed it. In his last outing, though, you know, he gave up a double. Then there was a wild pitch and a sack fly and a run comes in. And, you know, he actually had two games in a row that he was unable to protect leads in the eighth. So am I concerned? I am cautiously optimistic that he's going to come back and be the guy who the White Sox believe he is and who I believe he is. But it's been up and down, no doubt. And if the mechanical flaw that he had is fixed and can stay consistent, I'm not concerned. But some good outings in a row going forward would certainly help.
A short series in that first one, and it's looking like it's going to be White Sox and Astros, so I don't think it's going to really... You know, we could talk about Dallas Keuchel being in the postseason rotation or factoring in somehow, and it's probably not going to matter in a short series against his former team, which would be an interesting storyline. But I would just ask you, I was there the other night when he pitched. I mean, he grinded his way through. Like, that's all you're going to get out of him now? I mean, like, he has become the quintessential Hawk, like, cunning and guile guy. He's not going to miss bats like he once did. He's not as good as he was last year in a truncated season. But he did grind. Like, is he going to have a role? Or is one more start going to maybe predict that? What is the role, if any, for Dallas Keuchel in the playoffs on this team?
It's a question that hasn't been answered. You know, if it's a five-game series, are you really going to start 5 starters when you've got a top-heavy rotation? And what I mean by that is you've got, like, Lynn. I want Lynn in Game 5 if there's a Game 5. Do I want Dallas Keuchel? No. I mean, so I don't know how they're going to use him, if they're going to use him. He has come out and said, this was about a week or so ago, that he has not pitched. I'm not quoting him exactly, but he admitted he's been the worst pitcher in the starting rotation. He knows it. But he has gotten better. That was the best outing I've seen from him in a while, his last start. So that's definitely a step in the right direction. But what that's going to mean for a five-game ALDS and his role in it, I do not know the answer to it. It'll be one of those intriguing questions to be answered when the playoffs begin.
Chuck Garfine joining us here on the Carmen and Yurko Show. Miller and for Yurk today here on ESPN 1000. Chuck, a lot of pessimism there. How about some optimism? Luis Robert, man, he seems like he has, I mean, so we good. Knew the talent was always there, but, so you know, he needed to show a little bit of command at the plate. He's brought his strikeout rate down this year, and, man, it seems like the potential is unlocked. Right now, he's my favorite thing to watch on the White Sox where we kind of just bide our time and wait for the playoffs.
I think there's two guys who are going to go off in the playoffs offensively for the White Sox. Tim Anderson and him. Those two guys. And actually Grandal as well.
Oh, Grandal. But, oh, my God.
I mean, Tim Anderson, he showed – well, I'm kind of changing the subject a little bit. But when the lights were on, even though there were no fans in the stands, two guys offensively stood out for me. I'm going to go three with Grandal again. I keep, like, excluding him. Anderson went 6-for-13 against the Astros – or not the Astros, against the A's in that playoff series. Grandal hit two homers, and Luis Robert hit a 487-foot blast. And I think if I'm the Houston Astros, I'm really concerned about those three guys. I'm not even including Jose Abreu and Yoel Moncada. I'd be concerned about them too. But and Moncada's starting to really hit the ball as well. But Luis Robert, if you look at who has the greatest upside in the White Sox lineup, it's him. And he's playing like an MVP. He's probably not even at 100%. I mean, looking at him run, I think he's probably, 90%. I'm not even sure. But, I mean, just that he had hip surgery. Or hip flexor surgery. So he's been so exciting to watch. He's doing everything, hitting the ball all over the place and hitting it hard. So I hear what you're saying, and I'm really excited and encouraged by what I'm seeing from him, because he's realizing what the pitchers are trying to do to him, and he's not falling for a lot of the junk that they'll throw at him, and he's a real tough out, and he's putting together some great at-bats.
Carm, no question here. I just have to add to Chuck's point about Tim Anderson. We can go back to the Field of Dreams game.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
Tim
Dude,
Anderson lives
it.
For the big moment, yeah. And White Sox fans, he is the guy who, if there's a big spot in the playoffs between him and Abreu, I feel very good in that situation, because both guys I know, as leaders of the team, they live for those big moments.
You want the guys
big
who
stage.
You want the guys who aren't scared, yes. And they're not scared. I think they live for it. Chuck, have a great weekend, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, I'll see you guys. Have a great weekend, and hopefully the Sox. I'll take a sweep. They can maybe win
the
division on Monday.
Yeah, I would love that. Let's see it happen. We'll talk to Chuck. There he is, Chuck Garfine, at Chuck Garfine on Twitter. More of your Bears calls coming up. Thoughts about this weekend. Any scenario you envision in which Fields comes in and relieves Andy Dalton? Seems very unlikely, because the Bears would have egg on their face. 312-332-3776. More tickets to give away in about 30, so don't forget about that. 11:45, it's a free ticket Friday on ESPN 1000.
Working from home? We're back in the office? Don't miss a minute of Carmen and Yurko. Just ask your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
How'd you like to join Waddle and Sylvie and White Claw in Vegas for a football weekend? Oh, you're going to have a chance. Listen, Monday starting at 7 a.m., we're going to qualify a fan each hour with Cap and Hoodie, me and Yurk, Waddle and Sylvie. And then at 4:35, we're going to read a name from all the qualifiers. You'll have 10 minutes to call back to win a trip to Vegas the weekend of October 10th. You're going to stay at the Circa Resort and Casino. Waddle and Sylvie will broadcast live. And on Sunday, you're going to the game. And it's all brought to you by IDOT's Life or DeathIllinois.com. Listen to win all day Monday from Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000. You don't want to miss that on Monday when we are back after the weekend. Yurko will be back on Monday. Midway Jeff Meller is sitting in. Let's play Trent Dilfer, who's a former NFL quarterback, who is an NFL analyst, who knows a thing or two about quarterback play. This is Dilfer talking about the Bears and Justin Fields not starting on Ryan Russillo's podcast. Take a listen.
Because almost everybody's going to want Fields, right? The media sure. wants to talk more about rookie quarterbacks and the higher the pick, and the fans want it because he's the savior. And, you know, it, basically that's all that matters, right, is media and fans are doing a propaganda pitch. So I get why they are selling that this is why we're doing it. And I'm an Andy Dalton guy. I like Andy. I think he's a good starting quarterback in the NFL. I think he can get you through some tough times.
Couldn't be nicer.
And he can help you reset the ship. You know, I think from a football standpoint, he's going to raise your floor. I think that's what Andy Dalton is. He's going to raise your floor. I think what they're scared about is if they play Fields and he has Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson experience where there's going to be these giant ebb and flows, they're going to lose their jobs. I think that's, in my opinion, what I've seen happen in my time with the NFL is when you're making a decision where you're trying to raise your floor instead of raise your ceiling, you're protecting your job. They know they can be okay because they should have a really good defense, although it didn't look great last night. They can play kind of management football and get through the season with the carrot of we just gave Fields the Mahomes year, right? Because it's tangible. Like you can say, hey, this just happened a few years ago. We had this dude, Patrick Mahomes, that was lighting up practice, and we're playing Alex Smith, all up, kind of the same player as Andy Dalton. And look what it did for the Chiefs. Oh, by the way, I was there when we did this. So this was part of my plan. So you can sell that long enough and keep your job till the next year. Whereas if you play Fields right now and it goes backwards, you're gone. And there's a new staff coming in with Justin Fields as the quarterback. So that's been my experience in the league. I think most players, coaches would agree with me that that's probably what's happened.
Self-preservation mode.
I mean, can you argue with it? It makes a lot of sense. We've talked, too, about they can fall back on the Mahomes narrative. That's their blueprint that they're working off of. Yes. And we've talked about this. I reject that notion. I think the Chiefs certainly could have won. They had a chance to win a Super Bowl. There may have been a lost Super Bowl in there had they just started Mahomes' rookie year. I'm not guaranteeing it. Nobody can. But it's not like we live in a parallel universe where we can look at one and say, well, they lost to the Titans with Alex Smith under quarterback, but this actually happened. But I think there's certainly the possibility, had they played Mahomes' rookie year by week 8, 9, they might have won a Super Bowl that year too, right?
I mean, just look at the guy.
Like they might have needed to catch a couple breaks, but...
Yeah,
it's certainly possible, and if I'm not mistaken, that team had Kareem Hunt because he hadn't gone off the reservation
yet. Kareem Hunt.
You know, so they had some talent on that roster that maybe would have helped a young rookie quarterback go ahead and win a Super Bowl had he been playing. But it's easy to fall back on that narrative. So all that makes sense to me, Carm. The more, and then we played the Dominique Foxworth earlier talking about how players, it's a bad situation, and we just need to ride out the Andy Dalton games until we get to, and if you know
what, Lions come to town.
Here, I'll draw this comparison. It feels like the White Sox right now, where we are today, we're just waiting for the playoffs, and with the Bears, we're just waiting for Justin Fields to start.
Waiting for Fields, baby. Avery's in Arlington Heights on ESPN 1000. Hey, Avery.
Hey, guys. You know, I was getting very frustrated early on with all this Fields Dalton talk, but I mean, when I came to the realization that all Nagy is doing is providing himself with a security blanket, starting with Dalton, because if Dalton doesn't work out, which we know he probably won't, then he can fall back on Fields, and Fields can do what we believe that he will do. But what I initially wanted to talk about was David Montgomery running the ball. I mean, I didn't grow up playing football, but I've watched a lot of football, and from my understanding, and let me know if I'm wrong here, you run the ball until they stop you. Because if you can continue to run the ball well, that opens up the play action and it causes the defense to load the box and opens up the deep threat. You could throw it over their head. That's a pretty simple concept. Now, I think Nagy thinks that he's some kind of offensive guru. I don't know where he got that, but his decision making, his play calling, I mean, as simple as if David Montgomery is running for 41 yards, why not run him again? If he's running for 10 yards, why not run him again? I don't know what the stats are. You guys might know, but I would like to know what David Montgomery's stats are with 15 to 20 plus touches a game.
We could look at that, yeah. Well, and Avery, you're making the salient point that, yes, play action should be a big part of offenses. It seems to be part of the very good offenses around the league today. And sometimes coaches are of the mindset that even if we're not getting huge chunk yards, we want to run the ball because it will set up the threat and it'll set up what we can do off of that with play action as the game goes on. And if you're really never a threat to run it much, do teams have to defend against that wrinkle? I'll read you this real quick from 538. This is a story that I was looking at earlier this morning. The headline, Meller, is this. The 49ers believe in the magic of pre-snap motion. I'll just read you this a little bit at the top of this because it goes with what Avery was saying. Anyone who knows football and can fog a mirror knows that winning the turnover battle is important. Games often hinge on a team getting an extra possession, and when analysts have tried to quantify the edge, they've found that it's large. Teams win roughly 78% of the games in which they have a positive turnover differential. That goes up to like 90% when you're a plus two, by the way. But think about that, folks, 78%. The 538 story goes on. What's less well known is the size of the edge that play action and pre-snap motion provides. It turns out it's considerable. Since 2007, if all you know after a game ends is each team's share of offensive plays that featured play action and the share of plays that had some sort of pre-snap motion, you can correctly guess the winner 65% of the time. This is fairly impressive since neither metric directly measures the volume of yards gained or points scored. Instead, these are play design choices made before the ball is snapped and the play's outcome is determined. And unlike turnovers, both pre-snap motion and play action are completely under the coach's control.
Absolutely. I mean, not a surprise at all. I mean, listen.
And your frustration mounts.
Absolutely. It's just, I don't even know what to say anymore. Kyle Shanahan's awesome. Matt Nagy is just awesome. Kind of, it feels like, you know when you're...
Although, surprisingly, Kyle Shanahan is not awesome when they're favored. 9-18-1 against the spread. That doesn't wins, and I'm talking about a betting statistic.
I was
going to
say,
so,
that's, yeah.
You know, for strictly from a betting statistic... He's not awesome in that regard.
That is
He's
true.
Probably won a fair amount of those games, though.
Yeah.
So, all that matters for Kyle Shanahan.
I'll ride with the long-term coaching career of Kyle Shanahan over Matt Nagy.
I'll take the two blown Super Bowls and everything.
Although Cap, he's scolded me in the morning. He's crazy. He hasn't been too impressed with Kyle Shanahan's record last season because they had the most injuries in the NFL last year. But
that's the thing they can't get out. Jason Verrett's out for the year already.
Well, Jason Verrett, I mean, unfortunately, when you rely on him, he's had a lot of ACL injuries.
It's crazy. Kevin's in Elmhurst. What's up, Kev?
Hey, guys. Miss Yurko, but you guys are great together.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah, you know what? I think, Carm, you sort of mentioned this before. I think Nagy is so in love with his laminated menu that he sort of ignores the players. That's why, like, Fields is not in, this and that. And if I can make I think you guys are both movie guys, a movie analogy. You remember the movie Good Morning Vietnam with Robin Williams?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He's like Bruno Kirby. Bruno Kirby gets pushed aside, and he goes to his sergeant because he's putting in Robin Williams. Robin Williams is Justin Fields. And he goes, in my heart, I know I'm funny. Matt Nagy is like, I know my play will work for the fullback or the third string tight end. He's not a good play caller. It's so frustrating.
Kevin, thanks, buddy. And good analogy, too. Yeah, he's convinced it'll work until it doesn't. Let's go to, where do you want to go next? George in Old Town. What up, George?
Hey, Carm, I've got to tell you, Nagy uses the chess analogy, but he doesn't really know chess, and he doesn't know football, because two rooks can defeat a queen in the end game, and he's definitely in the end game. You have to control the vertical and the horizontal. And within the 20, he should be using nobody but Justin Fields because he's a threat on the outside, opens up the holes on a bad offensive line. He's just not thinking. He should, the first four games of the year, he should have 20% of the snaps. Maybe the next four games, he should be 50% of the snaps, Justin Fields. And that's how he should phase them in.
I am in George. Well, thanks. I'm intrigued to see how much Fields plays this weekend because he played, I think, a little bit more than we thought maybe in week one.
Sure. So. I mean, listen, again, to that Dilfer bite, self-preservation. At a certain point, they're going to start to feel the heat. Yeah. And if things go poorly by the offense, he knows he's going to have to go to Fields probably sooner than they would like because I think it seems obvious that if they were 2-2, or I'm sorry, you know, the 1-2, the Lions game was the pretty clear spot on the schedule to bring Fields in.
It does seem
but they may feel the pressure if things are going poorly. With the Bengals.
Todd Furman will join us. The very latest from what's happening in Vegas with the lines and why so much money was coming in on the Bengals throughout the course of the week. And will it change as we get closer to kickoff noon on Sunday? Furman live in Sin City next.
Carmen and Yurko.
Follow at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64 on Twitter.
On ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
We need that cowbell back down here for every time this rejoin comes on. We got to have more cowbell.
That cowbell broke, didn't it?
Oh, Waddle broke it? Let's buy another one. How much could it be? Ba-ba-ba. All right. We have tickets to give away in 10. Free Ticket Friday, courtesy of Chicago Cut, your home for White Sox baseball, ESPN 1000. So stick around for that. Time to make some money for the weekend. Let's bring in our buddy Todd Furman, one of the best in the business. Check out the podcast with Payne Insider, the Bet the Board podcast. Follow him on Twitter. He is at Todd Furman, and he joins us every Friday on ESPN 1000. And I know you guys touched on it when you did the podcast earlier this week. Add another dog to the ledger because the Giants did cover, even though they blew the game late last night. 13-4 against the spread through 17 games, Todd. Oh, my. There's got to be some big regression coming, I guess, right?
There is no doubt about it, Carm. But when you look at NFL Week 1, historically, this is a time of year where odds makers know as little about these teams as the general betting public. So you see that level playing field. You see the opportunity for some of these surprise teams that you can capitalize on. Probably takes about 3 to 4 weeks before you start to get a lot better idea of who the haves are, who the have-nots are, and which teams that you can blindly bet against going forward.
If I've learned one thing from you over the years, it's that professional bettors love to look at a scenario that's playing out here along the lakefront on Sunday. I mean, 10 days ago, the Bears were -5.5. The line opened at 3. It went all the way down to 1. I would have to imagine that no matter how crappy they looked, and they looked crappy on Sunday, that the pros looked at it and said there's too much value here to pass up. Is that why the line is inching back out towards a field goal?
You know, this game has been fascinating because you're right. Look ahead wise, the Bears would have been much more substantial favorites. Of course, Cincinnati goes out there, and despite their best efforts, hold on for dear life against the Vikings, winning 27-24 in overtime. And then the entire country watched the Bears on Sunday Night Football against the Rams. But for me, I didn't go into the season thinking that Bears defense was going to be an elite unit by any stretch. So that wasn't problematic. I was more impressed with the Bears' ability to move the ball against the Rams defense. Now, I mean, that's essentially a 13-point game where the Bears have a chance to kick a field goal to cut it to 10, and then things kind of snowball a bit. But when you dig into some of the numbers, the Bears were better in the first down category. They obviously gave up quite a bit in yards per play. Like, we know they don't have the explosive big play potential. But under a field goal, it is a much different handicap than it was at 3, 3.5 where it opened. So for me, it's Bears or pass. I just haven't gotten myself to pull the trigger yet because I do worry about that defense matched up against those talented Bengals wide receivers.
Todd, you mentioned how the first 3 or 4 weeks here gives us rubes maybe a little bit of a fighting chance where we know maybe just enough where we can actually be dangerous. Is there anything that you think stood out from week one that you want to enact as a gambler?
There are two teams that I'm going to watch extremely closely this weekend, and they're both traveling out to the West Coast for games, you know, outside of the division. One would be the Tennessee Titans. I mean, they were obliterated by the Arizona Cardinals, and that was one of the things that I did well last weekend. Played Arizona plus the 3, never had to worry about it. But it's a question of if Arizona was that good or Tennessee is that bad. I don't think Chandler Jones is going to pick up 5 sacks and 2 forced fumbles every single week of the season. So you're seeing that number slightly inflated for the Titans against the Seahawks. In a similar scenario with one of the Bears' NFC North rivals in the Minnesota Vikings, if this game was played week one, Arizona would have been about a 1.5 to 2 point favorite. Now we're talking about this number going through the key number of 3. It was as high as 4.5 before value seekers were betting the dog. So it'll be a good litmus test for Arizona. If they go out there and outperform odds makers' expectations, we can start to buy into them early on, and we may have to try and really adjust perceptions on a Minnesota team I thought that could surprise some people, but was rather rather disappointing in their week one performance.
Yeah, they were bad. They got some secondary issues and some O-line issues. So we'll see if Zimmer can fix those problems. We're talking to Todd Furman. Check out his podcast, the Bet the Board podcast, wherever you get your pods. Follow him on Twitter. He is at Todd Furman. It's Carmen and Yurko. So Yurk's back Monday. Meller's in. I'll play the role of Yurko because I think he would set it up this way when talking about the Bills and the Dolphins. He would say, Todd, Josh Allen has spent the last couple of years, pulling an Andy Dufresne in the shower on the Miami Dolphins. It would be something like that because all he has done is absolutely eviscerate Brian Flores and the Dolphins. It's amazing what Flores has accomplished. They've got the best mark against the number in the entire NFL since he arrived down there in South Florida in 2019. But the Bills have their number. They play a lot of 11 personnel, and it seems to have really worked. Is that the case going into this game? Is there a favorite on the road in Miami?
Well, the one part lacking, Karma, of your Yurk impression there was trying to get me to pick the Chelsea-Tottenham game on Sunday as well.
Right,
so
yeah.
Clearly, you didn't nail that. I can only give you a 6.8 out of 10 on the Yurk impression to get things going. But you mentioned it. I mean, when you look at this Bills-Dolphins matchup, it's fascinating for a variety of reasons. Because from a number standpoint, I think the Bills are slightly overvalued. But from a matchup standpoint, I couldn't go to the window in good faith expecting the Dolphins to correct an issue that's plagued them for the last couple of meetings like you outlined. This Miami team is built with their defensive backs in. They don't get a ton of pressure unless they can manufacture it with their front four. They love to put their DBs on an island. And that hasn't been a great scenario to trot out. Slow down the likes of Stephon Diggs and some of other Bills receivers out there. It was just week 17 last year when the Dolphins had everything to play for, and they gave up 56 points up there in Orchard Park, New York. I think Josh Allen will be significantly better this week than what we saw against the Steelers. The main thing that caused problems, he was under duress a lot more than almost any quarterback on that week one schedule, but the Steelers did it, rushing four, being able to drop seven. If Miami doesn't have that luxury, Allen will have time in the pocket. So for me, the number doesn't offer value, but I will not be going to the window trying to back a home underdog. The one angle I'm looking at, though, is the total. If it continues to come down and we get favorable weather forecast, I think this game can go over the total at 47.
Keeping it in the AFC East, Todd, the New England Patriots opened as a 3.5-point favorite. It looks like that's moved all the way to 6.
Yeah, best of that
two
gone.
Rookie quarterbacks here, Mac Jones, Zach Wilson. How far is too far for the novice gambler, though, when you're laying 6 points in a divisional matchup here?
You've lost a ton of value here. You're right, Meller, talking about this number and where it was when it opened. Now, it hasn't gone through any key numbers there. And for those new listeners to sports betting, when you talk about key numbers, we're referring to mainly the 3 and the 7 in the NFL. Some of those secondary keys become the 4 and the 6. So the mathematics behind it don't change as much as a game would going from 2.5 to 3.5. But again, you're right. Talking about a rookie quarterback, his first road start in Mac Jones, needing to win this game by more than a touchdown against a divisional foe. Nothing the Jets did left me brimming with confidence on their offensive line. I think Zach Wilson should be fortunate he wasn't in a body bag after his first performance against Carolina. And New England's not going to make life that much easier for him. Again, I gravitate towards the total here. A level of familiarity, two young quarterbacks. I think both coaches are going to put them in positions to take those high percentage plays, not a lot of risk. So I'll go under 43. This, in my opinion, has all the makings of a 21-17 type football game.
Alabama and college football is probably the marquee game of the week. Alabama goes on the road to take on the 11th ranked team in the country. And they laid more than 2 touchdowns. No big deal. Anything specific that you like or don't like in Bama land about 14.5 against Florida?
Yeah, this number is pretty fair. I mean, we actually made the game 13.5, but the fact I'm not running to take 14.5 with the underdog is probably a greater indication of my sentiments towards it. You look at Bryce Young, he'll be going into a fervent atmosphere, 100,000 screaming fans in a sold-out swamp. When I look at Florida, they don't have the weapons they did last year. There's no Kyle Pitts or Kadarius Toney on their roster. A kid by the name of Jacob Copeland will be their best weapon, but I think there are more questions about their quarterback situation. Will it be Emory Jones? Will it be Anthony Richardson? Or how will Dan Mullen kind of wheel and deal with that tandem? If I was betting this game, though, based purely on the number, I would lean towards Florida, but I need to see more out of these two teams before I feel comfortable making making a case for the Gators truly being a live home underdog, knowing that Alabama won't get caught looking past them, given how close that SEC title game was between the same two programs last year.
Yep. All right. Any best
players? Hold on, Carm. You're not the only one who can do a Yurko impersonation.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. It's the biggest rivalry game on the slate this weekend. God. It's a London derby, Todd. Derby. We've got ourselves Chelsea, Tottenham. No, seriously, though. I know our listeners. I will keep that offline. Kansas City and the Ravens. That is the marquee matchup on Sunday Night Football. How are you feeling about this one right now as the Chiefs are a 2.5-point favorite on the road in Baltimore?
Yeah, this is a game, and I know I'm going to sound like a broken record for you guys and a lot of the listeners here. This number, had the game been played week one, we'd have been looking at Kansas City under a field goal favorite in this spot. We, of course, see the Ravens come out to the desert and looked ill-equipped to slow down the Raiders. Derek Carr, when he was blitzed, absolutely carved them apart. And from a defensive standpoint, Baltimore being down Marcus Peters is going to loom even larger in this particular matchup. So Kansas City, more than worthy of being a favorite. Now, if I look at from a true number standpoint, to lay 3.5 with Kansas City here, I can't fully get behind it, but the X's and O's are way too much for me to ignore. So no strong sentiments on this game. Want to watch and see exactly what we're going to get from the Ravens on a short week after a heartbreaking loss on Monday night, knowing that they're a little bit undermanned on both the offensive and defensive lines.
Any best plays?
Yeah, we'll fire out a trio. We'll keep the tradition going. One in the NFL, we'll make the Philadelphia Eagles one of our NFL best bets, plus a field goal. I know we've lost a little bit of value at 3.5, but this is a 49ers team that's real banged up, and I think the Eagles are still undervalued. Let's see if Jalen Hurts is a little more aggressive, pushing the ball down the field. And in college football, what would week 4 be without a little bit of dumpster diving? One of which will go to the Glass Bowl, and we'll take Colorado State plus 14. This is as much a situational play against Toledo as anything else. Heartbreaking loss against the Irish last week. Yeah. Massive showdown against MAC champion Ball State next week, and it's a good buy-low spot for Colorado State. And we'll give you one total in one of the nightcaps. You look at Oklahoma State, they're a little bit challenged offensively, a lot better defensively than they're being given credit for. This will be a Boise State team that I think will have some success defending them. Boise, I don't think, will really put a ton of stress on Oklahoma State defensively. So I'll go under 57.5 in the Smurf Turf with an 8 o'clock kickoff Saturday night.
Beautiful. Have a great weekend, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Always a pleasure, gents. Best of luck with those bets.
Thanks, Todd. Todd Furman, White the Sox. Bet the Board White podcast. Go, go, and it's time for free tickets. Call it 10, you win. 312-332-3776. Free White Sox tickets on your home for White Sox baseball. ESPN 1000 every Friday for a free ticket Friday. Courtesy of Chicago Cut. Another chance at 45 past the hour when Waddle and Sylvie are back on the air later this afternoon starting at 2. More gambling and another play coming up next with Mike North. He has the bonus play when we return.
Hey, how are you? This hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Chicago's Big Ten team hosts Purdue in the Wildcat Classic on November 20th at Wrigley Field. Tickets on sale now at nusports.com.
Go Cats.
Did you miss some Carmen and Yurko?
You don't have to miss anything.
Podcasts are ready on the ESPN Chicago app.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Couple podcasts going up in about 2025. Mike and I taped it this morning. Make sure you get there. Check it out for the weekend and get you set for all the football action. Download the ESPN Chicago app today. Happy birthday to Merck. A big birthday weekend.
Thank you.
Happy
birthday.
Thank you. 51.
You don't look a day over like 49.
65. Maybe appreciate 50, it. Maybe 50. You look good for a 60-year-old.
Yeah, you look pretty good. Let's get some money in your pocket for the weekend, Merck. All right. Mike North has the bonus play. He joins Carmen and Yurko at this time each and every Friday on the Corona Hotline. Mikey, what do we like this weekend, buddy?
All I know is I can't remember when I was 51. So, hey, happy birthday to my buddy, Merck.
Thanks, okay? Buddy.
Hey, I got to tell you, you know, last week, 1-1, we had Iowa State, Carmen. You know, this guy, I'm hearing about this guy Campbell all the time.
Matt Campbell,
this and that, okay? Iowa State's coaches before him had more success against Iowa than this guy does. So let's just let that guy go. As far as that goes. But I did come up with Arkansas over Texas in what people considered an upset. I didn't because I picked it. But I didn't think that they would do what they did.
Hey, now, still an upset. That was a good pick.
Well, thank you, buddy. And you know what? So 1-1, the bonus play. I mean, we're getting revved up as usual. Now, we did the taping this morning, and since then I've gotten some new information. But I did go with one pick. Look, I know New England, he has a great record against the Jets. I know Belichick has dominated for years. But, like, you know what, folks? Yeah, Belichick and Brady did that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's a whole different ballgame.
True.
You got two rookies going tomorrow. You got the New York Jets getting six now. Was at 5.5. You know, if you look at what Wilson did last week, very good game. The same with Jones. So I think it's going to be within the 6 points. So I do like the New York Jets in that game. But the one that really I brought up on our show, which you'll hear tonight, and folks, don't miss it. You know, check out the podcast as quickly as possible to get the information you so desperately need to bankroll yourself. But this is the truth. As I'm looking at the other games, there's a couple that stuck out. But if Minnesota gets to 4, take the Minnesota Vikings against Arizona. A lot of Arizona love out there
right now.
Yeah. I understand that. Just like there's a lot of Buffalo love out there. Be careful of that game. I mean, Buffalo's not playing, if you want to know, any hobos here. I mean, Miami's pretty good, too. So be careful of the Buffalo-Miami game. I would lean towards Miami, and Buffalo could be 0-2 after this game, maybe. But my second pick, Carm, is going to be the Minnesota Vikings. So
Vikings.
Minnesota and the Jets.
Got it. And Furman was just talking about the Vikings, too, in that spot and liking them. So there you go.
Well, Jets, that's what Vikings. Happens when you get two handsome guys together.
That's like right. That. Couple of dogs. There we go. Mikey, talk to you next week, buddy, all right?
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, Mike. There's Mike Norton again. The podcast is going up in the next 20 minutes or so.
It's all right.
Like,
don't have to rush it.
Out of time to play the Daryl Strawberry.
I would highly recommend people check out, if
Let's
you have a little
Monday.
Bit of free time, 30 for 30, the Once Upon a Time in Queens. I just wrapped it up last night. It's a four-part series, so 4 hours.
So it's
a little bit of a commitment, but I promise you, there's not, you will at no point be like,
so
boy,
good.
This is dragging.
So good.
Here's a tease for maybe we'll do it Monday or Tuesday next week. There was not many things shocked me, Carm. There was a revelation by Daryl Strawberry that actually shocked me. And I know a lot about the history of the 86
nothing,
Mets.
Nothing about that.
This
Mets
one
team.
Surprised me.
How about Lenny Dykstra's story about when he tried to screw around with Gary Carter and what Gary Carter did to him?
Yes.
You got to watch
Lenny's
it. Baseball nerds.
Yes.
All right. I do. I'm going to try to watch it this week.
Tyler, you were 15 years from even being a glimmer in your father's eye.
Everybody enjoy the games in the NFL this weekend, and hopefully the Bears win, and we'll see how it goes on Monday when we're back. Yurko will be back Monday. Thanks, Midway. Good job by Merck. Happy birthday, buddy. Have a great weekend. And Tyler Aki and Brad in Bensonville has the final word.
Carmen and Yurko present today's final word.
Because you had to be a big shot, didn't you? You had to open up your mouth.
Today's final word.
You had to have a last word.
On Carmen and Yurko.
When you eat McDonald's for breakfast and you have that little burp around lunchtime, you feel it in the back of your throat, that's Maggie.
That was the final word on Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.